Hello, how's it going? Thank you for joining to today's episode. So today is the 23rd of July 2021, and what we're going to be doing is jumping into initially all about sales psychology and marketing and branding, and I'm going to go into some of the depths on how to actually get that stuff right, what works, what doesn't work, what's frankly a bit snake oily, and what's actually really, really, really powerful if you get it right. Okay, so we'll go through some questions as well as we go. And what these sessions really are about is, if you look throughout the week, there's always these recurring questions in Facebook groups, in communities, on LinkedIn, on YouTube, and pretty much every social platform out there. And most of those questions have a similar common thread. So that similar common thread this week, from what I've seen, is struggles with brand and sales and the psychology of engagement and how human behavior actually works. You know, how we as humans tick, how we buy, how we don't buy, what gets us interested and what turns us off. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give a couple of examples of brands, and I'm going to break down how those brands actually sell through their branding, through their messaging, through the visual story that they tell on their websites. And I'm going to show you how that kind of relates to you and your business and your brand, and we'll dig into that. So before we dig into that, then, for those of you who don't know me, who's new to the show, my name is Dan Holloway. So my mission statement is to help 1 million creative entrepreneurs to earn a stable, diverse income from doing what they love. So if you're into that kind of thing, then you're in the right place. Now, if we jump into some of the brands, let's talk something like Tesla. Now, if you go to Tesla.com and have a look at their website, then on Tesla.com's website, what you will see is, at least as of right now, is a picture of what's called the Model S, right? It's one of Tesla's cars. It's against the backdrop that's pre-faded out. It's a red car. It really stands out from the background. It looks prominent. There's a good contrast of color. You know, the background is kind of like a white color. The foreground is also a very light color. And there's this red car sat in the middle. You know, the wheels are kind of spinning. It's looking like it's a bit speedy. It looks like there's motion in the image. And the main call to actions on that page is a custom order or existing inventory. So it kind of assumes that when you go to the Tesla's website, you know what you're looking for, you know what you want. Now, if you scroll down the page on the Tesla.com's website, then you'll have another car, which is a Model Y. You know, it's, again, light background, light foreground, a bright blue car, lots of shadows and everything, and again, showing a speed, showing some kind of emotion because the wheels are blurry. Same goes for the Model 3. If you go down a bit more, there's a Model 3 car. So it's really covering all the bases. And then there's Model X. So if you go through all of these different pages on the Tesla's website, the Model S is the four-door saloon. The Model Y is a four-door hatchback kind of family car, almost like their version of an estate. The Model 3 is a smaller four-door car. I'm not sure if it's a hatchback or not. I think it is, actually. But it's like the smaller town car. The Model X is their big SUV kind of style vehicle. Very simple, it's very clean, it's very plain, but it's very powerful, right? They've done it really well, I believe. Now, if we go to something different, because obviously Tesla is very much, it's all of its marketing, all of its branding is appealing to the people who want the desire of something new and something different and something vibrant and something fast and something sexy. You know, that's what Tesla's all about. It really digs into primal emotions. Now, if you look at something like Nike, or Nike, if you're American, now if you look at those are slightly different. So Nike is an interesting one. So when you actually look at Nike's core website, so Nike.com or Nike.com if you're American, they almost do like the bait and switch kind of approach. And I find this one really interesting. And you'll see what I mean. If you have a look at this yourself and you go through the website, you'll see what I mean. So Nike App's fourth birthday is right now prominent on their homepage. So it's, and if you scroll down, there's like bright characters, There's like these 3D animated characters in there. You know, it's young, it's vibrant, it's colourful, it's kind of trendy to a degree. They talk about fresh essentials, going back to school, back to class. So it's all very, very timely, right? So schools are obviously breaking up for summer holidays, and they're talking about gearing up for the holidays. So when you scroll down further on their website, all of the trainers that they've got there are bright colours. You know, they are new, they're trendy, they're timely. And they're really, if you keep on scrolling down, there's, you know, young people, teenagers and young children, and all of the clothing and the apparel and everything for the kids going into summer, right? Now, the interesting thing, because that's very timely, so you go to a website, it lures you in. Now, their best sellers are very muted colours, which I find really interesting, because their best sellers are things like black fleece sportswear, you know, black leggings, white and black trainers, black and kind of like a fawny coloured trainers. You know, it's very plain, very mellow, very muted, very pretty much black and white, like literally is black and white. And you scroll through all of their best sellers, that's what people tend to buy, but they're lured in by the fresh and the new. So Nike does a really, really good job of hooking into the emotion and really dragging that towards you and pulling you in with that emotion. But then what you tend to buy with their best sellers tend to be muted, chilled, you know, essential day-to-day things that you can actually wear pretty much in a variety of different situations and so on, right? So that's kind of like a bait and switch approach, which again, I find very interesting. Let's go to someone like Amazon. So Amazon, again, very, very, very timely. It's all about learning development toys. It's all about, you know, I see learning development toys for children. I see podcasts. I'm not logged into my account, by the way. So this is like a non-logged in person's view. Free delivery on your first orders, gift cards, Amazon devices, try now, pay later for women's fashion. If you're anything like my wife, we've got three weddings. Two weddings. She's got a hen do to go to, so three wedding related events. She is losing her mind at the moment about clothing. You know, she hasn't got anything in the wardrobe, summer's coming up, and yet there's that whole kind of timely thing because of summer. So she is like losing her shizzle at the moment because she's having like wardrobe malfunctions. Because let's face it, we've been in lockdown for so long. It's like, you know, what's open, what's not. I mean, do we go to the shopping? Can we try stuff on? We can't. So again, Amazon's being very timely with buying try now, pay later on women's fashion. So very, very timely in what they're doing. If you look at some of their trending deals, it's like fans, desk chairs, like home working, home security, parasols for your garden, garden hoses, jet washes, outdoor lights. You know, again, summer's coming up, very, very timely, and they do a very, very good job of being timely and really kind of trying to figure out what people want in the moment at that particular day or even hour in some cases. Now, interestingly, also at the top, they've got the banner, which is all about Amazon devices, Prime Video. So they're all about subscription traffic as well and their subscription services and pushing their own electronic products like home electronics and smart devices. So Amazon does a good job of being timely and an e-commerce business because that's basically what they are. If you look at someone like Holland & Barrett, that's a, I'm not sure if they're in the UK, in the US, but here in the UK, they're a healthy foods, vitamins, supplements, sports nutrition, wellness and health, that kind of stuff. Like a whole foods type of style business. Now they're struggling at the moment because during lockdown it's been so busy. So Holland & Barrett's brand is all about like natural and health and nutrition and wellness. But right now their website is literally littered with like a sale here, 3 for 1, you know, spend X and get whatever percentage off. Like they're really into the kind of like the discount sales approach currently. They used to be people go into those shops and they pay the premium because they want good quality products out. Because they've been closed for so long, my guess is that they are very, very much struggling and they've gone the e-commerce route where they're trying to battle against like the Amazons of the world. Because you don't have the experience of going into the store. They've got to be online. They've got to battle in that online world. And they've gone down the discount approach. Personally, I think that's probably a bad idea, but I get where they're coming from, right? So right now, they're very much, they look almost needy. They look like they are in trouble relative to their brand, how it used to be, right? It kind of screams eek, especially with all the red over their website, all the sales have like a red background to it to kind of drag attention. It looks desperate. So that's, again, an interesting approach, I feel, because when you're talking about branding and psychology, do you want to be seen as needy or do you want to be seen as someone who is, you know, helpful, the go-to expert, you know, trustworthy? They're two very different things. Now, if I look in my world, to a degree, some of the partners that I work with, there's a site or a platform, sorry, called TubeBuddy. That's one of the brands that I do a lot of community engagement with. Now, TubeBuddy helps YouTube creators to grow their channels faster. And their website, if you go to TubeBuddy.com, is all about grow your YouTube channel faster. So it's all about the utility of helping you to grow your channel. You know, they are definitely aiming themselves as the almost like the toolkit in your pocket to help you to grow if you're on YouTube and if you're a YouTube creator. Very targeted, very niche, very specific. Go down their website and it's always crisp, it's clean, it's almost utility focused, you know, advanced keyword research. They dig into, you know, rank higher in search, optimization, publishing, promotion, testing. You know, a lot of what they talk about on their website is very much aimed at the utility of doing the thing, right? Because that's what they do. They have a great community, but first and foremost, people go to them because they want help. Now, the other one, which I'm just going to show you, just the last example here, we're going to dig into, is Ecamm Live. So Ecamm is actually what I'm using right now to record this and go live and grab the audio. Ecamm has a slightly different approach. They are very, very much a community-focused live streaming business. You know, they create the software to go live with. So Ecamm Live is a software-based application to go live with from Mac desktops and laptops. Their website has the video background of a guy called Adrian Salisbury, who's a lovely guy, actually. He's here in the UK. He does a lot of tutorials in collaboration with Ecamm. And there's a video background of him demonstrating the product and demonstrating the brand and showing what you can do, you know. And it's very much community focused about what they're talking about. You scroll down their website, if you go to ecamm.com, you'll see what I mean. It shows what you can actually go live to. So, you know, Facebook Live, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitch, Restream, Switchboard. I mean, I'm using some of those right now. You know, broadcasting studio, there's a lady called Luria Petrucci, who's a live streaming expert, Live Streaming Pros, I believe is her business name. You know, there's an image of her, so it's got that kind of influencer vibe thing going on. And they dig into like different scenes, different effects. They dig into, you know, what kind of like tech you can really leverage on this kind of stuff. So if you are a live streamer, this is like a nirvana for live streaming people, right? They're really, really digging into and tying into the community and the creators that they want. Because Ecamm's not like a come to Ecamm if you know absolutely nothing about live streaming and you can get up and running within, you know, 30 seconds. Ecamm has a bit of a learning curve because live streaming has a bit of a learning curve. So they're showing you what you can do, but they're also showing you a way which you can go from beginner through to advanced. So they're really kind of like showing you along the journey from beginners to experts, right? And that is a brand, I think, is a really powerful story-based brand. Now, when you look at the sales psychology of people, we buy with emotion and we justify with logic. That's basically what we do. You know, so as human beings, we buy with emotion, we justify with logic, and that's how we work, that's how we function. If I went out yesterday and bought a big screen TV because I wanted one, and I came home and I said to my wife, so I bought a big screen TV because I wanted one, it's in the garage at the moment, I'm gonna hang up on the wall this weekend. First thing she'll say is, how much was that? And why? And how much is that again? And there'll be all these questions, right? Because she's not bought into the emotion that I'm wanting to justify this purchase with. But if I went to her and I said, okay, so the TV we've got at the moment up on the wall, after numerous balls and tennis balls and toys being thrown at it over the years, there's a couple of marks over it. It's a bit annoying when we're watching TV because we all comment on it. I saw this deal in whatever the local electronics store was. I saw this deal and it's a really, really good deal. It's like half the price of what it normally is. I get a 3-year warranty. I've got a free mount that comes with it because the mount's a little bit battered at the moment as well. So we get a new mount, I can stick that up in place of the old one. It has smart features. I mean, I kind of list off all the things that make it amazing. And it comes with its own insurance as well. And she's like, okay. So it's no longer me saying, right, I just got a new TV because I wanted one. It's me really selling to her. We both really kind of wanted a new TV, but I've anchored that desire in facts and in figures and in tangible things that you can't necessarily easily doubt, right? Which is why I think this is a really powerful thing to dig into, because when people buy with emotion and justify with logic, that is the natural process of buying. When people buy with emotion, but they don't justify with logic, or similarly, when we as business owners, when we sell with emotion, but we don't anchor in logic, or if we sell with logic, but don't tie it to an emotion, that sale is volatile. That sale is not solid, it's not stable, right? And that's important because we as business owners, we need to tie into the emotion, but justify with the logic. We have to cover both, right? And I'll show you an example. Earlier today, I was on LinkedIn and a post came up from someone who I've never engaged with. He actually reached out to me and connected with me after I commented. I'm hoping he doesn't mind me sharing this with you because I genuinely hope it might actually help. Now, he posted the question about, he's a web designer with a background in, I believe, gaming design. Now, when we jump into this post, he's put a poll out. He's basically asked the question of what price you would expect to pay for a 5-page website, right? And the options are $250 to $999, $1,000 to $1,999, $2,000 to $3,999, or $4,000 plus. Now, me being me, I commented with something that said, it depends. How is the designer going to make me feel about the planning, the development, and the end result? With a little kind of like, thinking emoji and a little wink emoji. Most of the other people were saying definitely 2K for a high quality look. There's like a 5-page fat website. Is it hosting included? Is it not? They're going into the how and the things and the tangibles. And, there's a lot of people saying, what's your hourly rate? How much do you charge per day? People mentioning about what you can get on Fiverr these days. And then getting into a debate about, what the level of quality you can get from designers on Fiverr and companies like that, like Upwork and everything else. So they're giving opinions. I did an episode a couple of days ago about advice based from opinion rather than advice based from experience. So this is a prime example of me giving advice based from experience, right? So the guy replied, and he went through, just as a designer, and to be fair, he does look like a good designer. I checked out some of his stuff, and he actually looks like he's got some pretty decent skills. And he went through his process flow. He talks about fonts, he talks about initial discussions, creating the SVG files, really kind of like drafting out the graphics package. I'm just reading this as I go. Pre-drafting, going through a sign-off process, going through change control, checking the responsiveness across mobiles and tablets, and then like finishing it off and going through discussions based upon changes that he has in relating with the client. So a real designer focused process flow about how you get to an end package. And like I said, this guy's work from what I've seen is pretty, pretty good, like up there. I replied to him and I said, and I'll actually read this verbatim. I said, it sounds like a great flow, but that's the how, right? Where I see a lot of businesses struggle is that in emotional connection, because their brand, because their brand that springs to mind is a company called BrandUp. The website is something like We Are Brand Up or Brand Up or something like that. I can't actually remember what the website address is, but it's We Are Brand Up is the one that I've seen. Their founder is very much a personal brand, connecting on the emotional level with their audience, way more than the how of the design. And if you look at their designs, personally to me, they all kind of look the same. And they do. I mean, the palettes look very similar. The designs look similar. They almost look templated. You know, they have a very similar kind of design aesthetic to them. And their clients, they pay like into the high five figures for the branding services this company sells. But I said, I guess the point I'm trying to make is that they're not actually buying a website, nor are they buying a brand. What they're buying is the feeling that the founder is selling to them. And that's what they're paying the big bucks for. They're not buying, you know, a once in a lifetime, never to be recreated, amazing brand. They're buying the feeling that the branding process gives them. You know, things like photo shoots and things like interviews and the whole kind of experience, that's what they're buying. And they're buying for pretty high prices compared to what a lot of other people are actually buying websites for. And if you have a look at some of their content, you'll see what I mean. Because most designers I know, I've actually used them as an example a couple of occasions. They're nice, don't get me wrong, they are nice looking designs, but they're not, to my mind, something I would ever pay, you know, 10, 20, 30K for. But if the price wasn't necessarily the design, but if the price was the feeling that the branding experience gives me, then it makes that price more valuable. It makes that price more justified because I'm no longer buying a website. I'm no longer buying a brand. I'm buying a feeling. And the price of a feeling is literally what you make it, right? A price of a feeling is entirely what you tell yourself it's worth. And when you sell like that, that makes the difference between you spending $100 on an online course from Udemy, or even $10 on a Udemy course, or spending $20,000 on exactly the same content delivered to you by someone who you think is a massively important, you know, crazy successful influencer. The content is probably exactly the same. The delivery, probably not that much different. But the price is based upon the experience you feel, not the content you get. So that's really what I wanted to dig into, that real clincher. It's the value you get versus the price you pay. A lot of businesses struggle with that. There's a question I've actually missed. I wonder how Primark are doing, having been closed for so long and never having sold online, and still refusing to by the looks of it. So if you look at Primark as a brand, they are all about high volume logistical shifts of product. But they're all about keeping it in store because their stores are their economics entirely. You know, they don't have warehouse distribution. They don't have the crazy kind of like to your door delivery processes. If they went into that world, they would have to lower their economic model and increase their prices accordingly. And that would put them in line with pretty much every other budget fashion brand out there. They'll be competing with like, you know, the supermarket fashion brand things that you kind of get in store. They'll be competing with those people without the supermarkets to back it up. I think the only other brand that went down that road was when it was still going. There's a business called Debenhams and BHS and a couple of others who were kind of like department stores. They've all gone under now. They've all gone into administration. But there were a couple of brands who were trying to get low-priced store space from department stores and selling their businesses without having the overhead of the massive leases. When those department stores went under as well, where else do they go? They can't. And when you can't go into a shop or you don't have an online presence, what do you do? You know, I think it was Boohoo who actually bought the intellectual property and the e-commerce rights to one of the department stores that went under, and they didn't want anything to do with the physical units at all. Like the physical units got shut. They literally just took the domain name and the website assets. That was it. And they're not interested in anything else. So I think Primark is going to bounce back. I mean, people are just going mad for. My wife's literally, she's got a list downstairs of the things to get for the kids when Primark's kind of like back open and everything. And she feels a bit more comfortable shopping there. And there is a list on our fridge at the moment, just ready to go. Because it's like, you know, we can spend the same amount of money in one store to get 5 outfits, or we can spend that same amount of money and get 10 outfits for both children and probably have change. So why would we not do that, given they're going to just cover it in mud and rip it and shred it and get grazes and bleed through it and everything, because my children are young and nuts. I've got a couple of questions here. Same's related to the property market. You said experience, not only central heating and the roof. So always make sure to add extra thousands. Yeah. I mean, the property market's an interesting one. When you're in that property world, I mean, there's actual established brands who will go into expensive homes and just dress it up. You know, there's businesses out there who will just come around your house with vans filled with like fancy like furniture and accessories, and they'll literally dress your home, take loads of photos and make it look like a show home, take all that gear out again, and off you go, off they go. I mean, it's they dress it to sell it, because they're evoking that feeling of, you walk into a dressed room, or, you know, during a house, during like a show home day, whatever you call those things, open house, that's what they call it. And someone walks into a dressed home and like, oh my God, this is amazing. They buy it, and then when they walk into it, they're like, oh, I've got to buy an interior designer, I've got to get loads of furniture, how do I get that feeling back? They spend loads of money on like interior design, they haven't quite got it right, and then they go through decorating, and like 5 years later, they're still doing it. But yeah, it's a feeling, right? Just go through a couple of other comments. Those stores just never moved with the times. C&A too, so yeah, I remember them. I do remember C&A actually. Personally, I believe that the high street in general, outside of industrial park units for larger brands, I think the high street has pretty much died an accelerated death during COVID. I think COVID has accelerated by a good decade what was happening to the high streets anyway. And I was actually talking about this long before COVID with the numerous startups that I've worked with who were actually trying to get into that retail world. And I said to them back then, and this was like years ago, that retail is all experiential. So retail these days, if it's not got a heavy experiential element to it, then you're missing a trick. Because if I had a store where you can come in, you can browse some clothes, you can browse some books, or, you know, designer items or whatever, and I have a coffee place in the corner where you can sit down, you can read like an antique book, having a nice, you know, coffee and a slice of cake, those people will be far more likely to buy something from the shop than they would if they just walked in and browsed for 30 seconds. Because it's all about experiential. You know, so if they sit down in a cafe place and they're looking at everything around them, they have time to absorb it, they have time to get the feeling, you have some music playing, it gets them into kind of like that relaxed, chilled out mood. You know, the staff are friendly. What did you come in here today to look for? Is there anything we can help you with? Oh, I just, it's my, I don't know, sister-in-law's birthday. She really likes some candles. We've got some nice ones over here. I mean, do you want to have a, oh, tell you what, we'll just light one. And you just see what it smells like. I don't know if you can do that in retail outlets, like light a naked flame. But you know what I mean? Like, it's that whole experience, right? And the feeling. If retail doesn't embody that whole experiential element, I think retail is going to decline vastly more rapidly than it ever did before COVID, or it was going to before COVID. That's what I believe, anyway. Anyway, that's enough for me today. So I will speak to you again. Take it easy. Thanks for joining, and have a good one.